Kayakers of the internet, welcome to Advanced Kayak Angler Podcast. Appreciate y'all tuning in. Kurt, what's up, man? How you doing?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. Spring has finally hit Ohio, man. It has been nice the past 2 days. Unfortunately, I broke the belt in my 360 drive, so I had to actually clean my kayak today to remove all the mud from the Ohio River to get at what I needed to fix. So I spent most of this beautiful day today, my free time on this beautiful day today, just cleaning my stupid kayak. How about you, man? What's going on with you?
I fish Logan Martin. I've been crying ever since. So, no, hey, I lost some jerk baits, so I got a restock. I was one of those people that Tackle Warehouse, like somebody's stole my account information, so they gave me like a free $115.
No kidding.
This is my $115.
Yeah. Man, right on.
They actually stole my information.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, they stole your information, though.
Yeah, it didn't cost us anything. Just had to get a new card. Inconvenience, but I mean, it cost me a few bucks. But I got what, 7 MegaVision 110 Junior. So yeah, I'm going to need them for this weekend for where I'm fishing. So looking for a little redemption,
a little payback.
Yeah, a little payback. I'm set the hook on them some bitches. All right. But yeah, that's it. But we do have somebody who did great in the tournament this weekend. Go ahead and bring them on. We got Adam Fillmore and Dave Havenstein. What's up, fellas?
What's up, Daniel? What's up, Kurt?
And tonight, we brought y'all on to talk about square bill crankbaits. But since we haven't had y'all on the show, tell everybody who you are. Dave, we'll start with you.
I'm David Havenstein. I fish a bunch of different series in Kentucky. I live in Kentucky. I fish 2 Kentucky series, some of the Tennessee Bass, some of the Hobies, some of the Bassmasters. It just kind of depends on how vacation and tournament falls. I started kayak fishing in 2019, I think. Yeah, I picked up fishing because in the early 2000s, I was addicted to pain medicine real bad. And when I finally got clean, I had to find something to do with my time and whatever. And so that's how I got into it. And I just haven't looked back. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Right on, man. Right on. Did Dan freeze up?
Oh, yeah, man. That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm back. No, it's funny how the sport brings me different people in for different reasons, and it kind of all gives us a purpose in some way. And man, that's awesome. It's done that for you for sure. Adam, how about you? Coming off your 4th place finish. I'm very jealous, but tell everybody who you are, man.
It's all right. Come to Norman and finish 4th place and I'll not get a check and then I'll feel bad. So we can be even. I'm Adam Fillmore. I've been kayak fishing now for about 10 years. The irony is I've only really been tournament bass fishing, kayak fishing for the last 3 pretty heavy. I got into it saltwater fishing, a while back and did pretty good in a couple saltwater tournaments. But I've always been a boat tournament angler, bass tournament angler. I fish, 15, 20 tournaments a year for the last 20 years. So, but for whatever reason, I owned a tackle store and native dealership over here in Lake Wylie for 5 or 6 years. And we supported Queen City, but I think I might have fished 1 or 2 just random events. I just never really got into it. We had a kayaks and greenbacks. I don't know. A couple guys from all over the country showed up for that. I think about 90 at the time. It was the biggest one. And that kind of propelled the Queen City and the Carolina group. Vinny's done amazing work with that. So
yeah, different regions now, right?
Yeah. I think he's up near like the Virginia Smith Mountain area. And then he's doing, North and South Carolina. So it's, it's a pretty big area, but I fished it full time a couple years ago and then hopped into one of the Hobies on Hartwell. And that was actually, I think the 2nd time I'd ever been to Hartwell. And, went from like 68th to 4th and made the TOC that year. And I'm like, all right, this is cool. And then fished the trail the next year and kind of stunk, just barely missed, barely missed a TOC, barely missed a check at like two of the four events that I fished. And then last year, I kind of took some time off. But this year, I'm traveling again, and I fished Harris, which we don't need to talk about that. And went to, obviously, Logan Martin last weekend. And next up is Home Lake here at Norman. So, but yeah, been around the kayak world for a minute. So it's been awesome seeing it evolve from, like I said, when we did kayaks and greenbacks. I mean, we, at that time, I think we were using forums to kind of promote it, as opposed to Facebook pages. And, you know, now here we are with, you know, 285 or 58. How many were at the Bassmaster two weeks ago?
240 something, right?
I think it was 250 something. So
yeah.
Here's something that you may not know, but I entered that tournament, and I was the weekend before we went to Florida, and I'd fished Queen City Saturday. So I was like exhausted. My wife was driving. I woke up and I was just texting a buddy of mine about Lake Murray. Didn't even think anything about it. And then Steve had sent out something about W9s on Thursday, I think, or Wednesday. So I went to do that. I'm like, I'm going to look at the rules. Well, I didn't realize that their information rule was like backwards from Hobie. You can't talk to anybody not in the tournament once practice starts. So I ended up DQing myself essentially from the event. And speaking of square bills, that was like, I had five tied on to go to that tournament, and Murray's only an hour and 20 minutes from me too. So it sucked not being there. But you know, I wouldn't have, it was, you got to read the rules, man. So it's, was on me, kind of silly thing. I will not do that again. I assure you. But for anybody out there that's watching, just know that Hobie's is at the end of practice, Bassmaster's at the beginning of practice. But yeah, to see the sport get that big is crazy, man. You know, I think the biggest bummer of that, I wanted to be a part of that just because it was such a big event. So, but yeah, it's awesome where it's come to. So
yeah
it's, you know, we were looking at the biggest growth probably in fishing history, really. I mean, with kayak fishing and just how affordable it is to get into compared to bass boats, and just the explosion of tournaments that are happening, it's
for sure
amazing, man. But let's talk about square bills, man. I'm ready to dive in. I do okay with them, but I'm really interested to hear your guys' insights and how to, like, you know, what's the difference between someone like me who's okay with them and guys like you guys who are kicking ass. Dave, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll dive in. I am a crankbait junkie. All types of crankbaits. I've gone down the Japanese rabbit hole. I mean, I don't know. I guess it started a couple years ago. I started doing pretty well in like the mid depth range. And then I just started experimenting with different rods and changing out different hooks. And, you know, now I have a pretty good handle on them. And usually I'll throw a crankbait if I can get away with it before I throw almost anything else. Obviously I love flipping and stuff like that too, but I don't know. I just, I have boxes and boxes of different ones, and square bills are my favorite. You know, I just like banging them into stuff. There's just something about it, you know, just cracking them into rocks, cracking them into logs.
So what's your favorite square bill right now? Like the one that, like, if you were to go to wherever you fish locally, you would grab and go.
I don't know. Probably like, I like balsa ones, but I like the Norman Fat Boys. I like the Rapala BX Brats. And then I like the Fritz sides, obviously. But a lot of times with the Fritz sides, I will throw like they're, you know, the flat side crankbaits. A lot of times with those, I'll throw a Fritz side 7, which is more of like a coffin bill, even in like 4 foot of water, just because of the way it digs in and just deflects and bangs off of stuff. Yeah, probably one of those is the first one I'm going to go to. And then I have like, you know, then I like have a bunch of the little custom painted like mega bass square bills. And, but yeah, those are probably my top favorites.
A mega bass wasn't expensive enough. You got it custom painted too.
Well, people buy like their generic ones. They're made in the same shape and style. And so people will buy those and paint them, and they're not super expensive. But I have real ones too. But yeah, they're pricey.
Can you kind of explain like a round body square bill versus a flat side? And when you use one versus the other, is it just water temperature?
It's a lot of people say to throw like flat sides, which this is like a foot side, you know, it's pretty skinny and flat. A lot of people say to throw those when the water temperature's cool, but really, yeah, I don't really pay attention to that stuff. It's not necessarily true. It's just kind of what they want. You know, a lot of times now, since there's so much pressure, I will throw stuff that doesn't have rattles in it. I've tend to done better on those, you know, just recently. But it doesn't really matter when you're banging it into rocks. It's going to make a bunch of clicking and clacking anyways. So, but then like the fat body ones, like the ones that are real round and fat and whatever, those seem to plow through vegetation better. And like you can throw this through some types of grass and it won't even hang up just because the body's so round and fat, you know, and it wobbles so wide. But yeah, to me, there's no real rhyme or reason. I'll throw them both. I usually start out with a flat side because it seems to be a little bit more finesse. It's not so much of a, you know, big crazy water moving thing. And then I'll just go from there.
Now, do you get real picky with your hooks? I know with my AMI crankbaits, I get real picky with my hooks a lot of times.
I do.
You know, I like a couple different Strike King ones. They're not like super expensive, but I rip the hooks off of them because I like the color pattern on them.
I do. When I practice, I don't really care. I'll throw them with stock hooks if I've just opened up a new one or whatever. But when there are ones that have decent stock hooks, like if I take a Fritz side or something out of the package, those Berkeley hooks are pretty good. And even the Rapala ones, like the hooks are, they'll bend out, but I usually have my drag set kind of low on crankbaits anyways. But like they're sharp and they're good at first, but they just get dull quick. So the hook that I use, and I've gone through, you know, different ones, the G Finesse Gamakatsus are good and whatever, but I use the Dual Realis Nano treble hooks. They're not cheap, but they almost like hip.
That's the first time I've ever heard of theirs.
Yeah, I've never heard of them either.
Yeah, I put them on those. I heard you talking about the 110 Juniors, Daniel. They're really good on replacement hook for those because they're about the same weight.
Huh. They almost, you can't really see it on this camera, on the cell phone camera, but what they are, they're kind of like a G Finesse hook. Like they got that coating, that almost like Teflon coating, but they're thin. But the difference is like when they curve back up, the very tips of the hooks point out just a hair. And so if a fish swipes at it, it will still get them really good. And like even with one hook, you can get them in a lot of times. I found out the hard way, like I do not like EWG trebles. I don't like trebles that are super thick unless I'm just throwing some giant crankbait, like the big 6 cents 2-point, you know, whatever they are. But yeah, I tend to use those most of the time. And I've got a drawer full of boxes of the Dual Realis Nano hooks because I bought them on sale or when I've had gift cards or whatever, and just all different sizes. That's my favorite hook. And then I have favorite rods also. Like for most of my smaller crankbaits, I use the Daiwa Rebellion glass rod, and it's like a composite, you know, it's my favorite rod. I've used a bunch of different crankbait rods. Some of them are like too mushy. Some of them are too stiff. And this one, and like I said, I don't ever really crank my drag tight. Like I have my drag where I can kind of pull it with one hand fairly easily, because when you get one of those big giant fish, you don't want it to rip the hooks out of its mouth or whatever. And like I'll play them unless it's certain circumstances. Like if I'm throwing it around some type of real woody area where if they tear or drag, they're going to definitely wrap me in trees or something. Then I might like set it tighter, but I tend to use my drag and use my spool, you know, click my bail, click my spool or whatever to let them run with it and stuff like that. And then for like, there's another crankbait rod that I really like. I can't remember which one it is exactly. It's one of the Tetula Elite rods. Like, I can't remember which pros it is, but it's a crankbait.
Takahiro Amori. He has like a square bill kind of rod.
Yeah, it might be, and it's a little bit stiffer than the Rebellion rod, but it's still plenty soft, and it's, yeah, I like to throw it with, like, square bills and stuff that move a lot more water, like your bigger, wider square bills, and, you know, when you're really trying to cause a commotion or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I've just learned all that stuff just the past couple years as I've just really got into crankbaits, and I think all the tournaments that I've gotten like checks in except for one have been on some type of crankbait.
Nice, man. Nice. Wow. So, Adam, let's hear your take on crankbaits, kind of like your basic setup and your rods, and maybe talk about your reel and line a little bit.
Yeah.
For sure.
A lot of everything Dave said, I agree with. The only thing I do a little different, I do like an EWG hook a lot of times. I use that. It's a BKK short shank EWG, and it's actually got a pretty thin wire on it. So it kind of eliminates. I have used those nano hooks, and they're very, very good. You know, depending on the bait, usually the weight of the bait is what, if it's a light balsa, you know, something flat side wintertime, throwing it on light line, I do like more of a finesse hook like that. But if I'm, you know, throwing a you know, probably our the most popular square bill around here is the Lure Jensen Speed Trap. If you don't have one of these tied on this time of year, you're getting beat by somebody who does. Like I actually caught one down at Logan Martin on this exact one. This is an older color, Red Craw. They haven't made it in years, but you know, I do like an EWG hook. I love the coating on that slick finish. I won't use a hook that don't have that, if worm hook or I don't. It's just in my head. It may not be. I just love it. I mean, I use a lot of Hayabusa hooks too. If I don't want to eat EWG, the Hayabusa is a really good treble hook as well. Generally, I change out the split ring too with like a Spro, a little heavier duty split ring, depending on the bait. Some brands have good ones. You can tell usually if you go to change your hook and your split ring opens up and stays opened up, then you probably should put a better split ring on there. And I generally change if it's got a split ring on the nose, I'll put a egg snap on there, like a decoy or a VMC egg snap on the nose. Just not necessarily to change baits out faster, but I think that the wider opening on that egg snap gives you a little more wobble on the bait too. So those are usually the first two things I do. As far as rods, I've actually had built my own rods for a few years now. I use the Bushido 7.2 CV7-2 10 and 12 a lot. I use the 8 like on a smaller light balsa or smaller shad wraps.
Bushido?
Yeah, Bushido. Yep, American Tackle Bushido blanks. Yeah, they're really good. I've had zero problems on them. It's a graphite blank. It's like a composite to where it's not, I don't think it's got fiberglass necessarily in it, but it's like a moderate action. So, and contrary to a lot of people, like throwing their crankbaits on mono for the stretch, you know, they say it gives you a little, you know, if you hang up on something, it pulls off, it'll give you a little recoil, or if they swipe it, you're not pulling the bait out of their mouth. I think with the technology with rods now, I use 15 pound P-line fluoro for almost every crankbait I throw. You know, I throw speed traps a lot. I have a bajillion balsa baits. I hardly throw any of them. I'm more of just a collector of them. I did actually in practice caught one on this. It's a Marshall J1 trap, I believe it's called. It's like a mini speed trap. I mean, it's basically he was just mimicking a smaller speed trap with a small rattle in it. It's got more of a let's see if I can get the hook out of my finger. It's got more of like a thumbnail square bill type bill on it. But this thing, I had one probably about a 19-inch largemouth freaking have that in a snout. And that's another reason why I like a wide gap of thinner wire hook like that. It just seems like no matter where they hit it, they get stuck. I mean, if it's in their mouth, I like having that little bit, bigger gap for it to move around so they don't get leverage on the bait. And also the short shank's nice because you can get away with a little bit bigger hook without your hooks tangling up. So, but yeah, speed trap 99% of the time. I have a couple of,
Why the speed trap?
Sorry, you broke up really bad. Is that me?
No,
I think that's
sorry. My internet's awful. Why the speed trap?
I have no idea. It's just when I moved here, the funny thing is Lure Jensen's kind of known for making salmon baits. Like we used to, I'm from Michigan. I was born and raised in Michigan. I moved down here when I was 19. My grandparents lived down here. So, I mean, I grew up fishing up there. So it was a big, obviously, culture change. I had 8 spinning rods and about 100 packs of tube baits. So I got rid of all that real quick and started fishing a speed trap. It's just been great over the years. It's evolved. I mean, these older ones, I don't know how it might be hard to see, but the original ones have a dimple on the belly like that around the hook ring, and they have like it's more of a knocker rattle as opposed to, I don't think I have a new one. I don't know if I have a new one here. I do have a new one. This is a newer one, and it's got a higher pitch, more of a, I guess, like there's multiple rattles instead of just being a one knocker. Kind of hard to tell maybe, but that's the color right there. That's Crystal Crawl. That is, I used to sell between 500 and 600 of these a year out of my shop. Like that was just, you had to order just a bunch of these. And when Rapala took over Lure Jensen, the sales rep even said, like, for whatever reason, the Carolinas is just, it's very popular. I was talking to Joy Randall about it the other day. He said that, I didn't know this, but Aaron Martin's actually won a tournament, I think in Oklahoma, he said, on one. And so, I mean, but it, that they just seem, they're cheap. I mean, they used to be, they were $6.99, I think. You can still get them for $6.99. So they're fairly expensive. They're very tough. The older ones aren't. So, like, if I'm throwing one of these old Red Craws, I'm going to be fishing for a bunch of money and just want that little, I don't even know if it's necessarily going to catch more fish, but in my head, it's like, you know what I mean? So,
confidence, man.
But they're very durable. The older ones, the lifts like to break just because I guess over time, but they're durable. They make it, they just work. I don't know. They work. It's a confidence thing, I think, more than anything. And they just eat it, man. Spots and largemouth. They eat it. They eat it all year too. I mean, this is my favorite time of year to throw it. Actually, up till about right now, once the spawn hits, I generally slow down on that. After the spawn, post spawn, I'll throw like a, maybe a more of a balsa bait on some like flat points and stuff. Something that'll come up out of the rock better. That's one thing about balsas I like versus a speed trap. Speed trap is a plastic, injection molded bait. Whereas a balsa is a higher floating bait. So if you can kind of bring it through rock and stuff, and it'll kind of back itself out. That's one thing that, balsas are really good about. And the bigger the bait it is, obviously, the better it is about getting itself out of snags and stuff. But yeah, speed traps work, man. They're really good. I was at Toledo Bend last year or 2 years ago for the Hobie. And there was a bait maker in Ohio named Wes England. Probably him and another guy about how Jimmy Edders, I have probably in the neighborhood of 300 or 400 of each of their baits. Like I have a bunch. Unfortunately, Russ passed away recently and can't get them anymore, which, it makes me not want to fish them because I've only got, I don't know. But at that tournament, for whatever reason, I'm like, I'm going to tie one on and we're going to go to work. And I actually caught my two biggest fish. I didn't catch Chet, but I did catch my two biggest fish on it. And it's just a little wire through. He uses a copper wire, just a balsa foiled. It's got a little bigger lip on it. So I felt like it was getting down a little deeper than a speed trap would for me. And I was actually cranking a road bed that I had found there and caught, you know, two pretty decent fish. They were both about 4 pounds or so, like 19s, I think, both of them upper 19s. But yeah, I don't know. It just, I like around here, they've eliminated a lot of the cover on Lake Wylie and Lake Norman. It's all docks and rocks now, riprap and rocks. So a crankbait is, I just, for whatever, I just feel like it's the best thing to fish in open water if you want to get contact with the bottom, if you want to, you know, banging off stuff and coming out of stuff. Square bill is just is the way to go. But yeah.
So I got a question for you guys. You know, I don't always do this with crank or with my square bills, but I definitely do this a lot with my lipless cranks. I will change out the size or the weight. I'm really dealing with the weight of the hook to get a little different action, you know, like to slow it down so it's not ripping so fast, it's not wobbling so fast. Do you guys play around with doing that at all?
I don't. We used to sell this Zappo, I think, made it. It's a little screw weight that goes on the hook of your crankbait, and it makes it do all kinds of wild stuff. Zappu or Zappos. I can't remember who sold it, but it was pretty neat. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I feel like usually when I'm changing out the hardware, it's just for strictly better hook sets or better, you know, hookup ratios. But yeah, I mean, you definitely can. I mean, it makes a huge difference. So that these balsa baits, especially, people don't, you know, they see them listed 25, 30, 40, 50, up to, I've got some, I had some old tap coffin bill crankbaits I was collecting for a bit that I'd pay, you know, in the neighborhood of 100 to 120 bucks a piece for. And people don't realize what goes into tuning something like that, you know, and it's the same thing with swim baits, big swim baits. I mean, it's not like, it's just like, oh, here you go. It works, you know? So yeah, there's definitely something to that. I can't say that I've done a lot of that, but there's definitely something to that.
And now with colors, I know some people like Ike had his own custom colors. Do y'all leave them out in the sun, or is there anything crazy y'all are doing to kind of get them, you know, like maybe a little bit flatter finish? Or
I send them to Mark Restivo and have him paint them.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Your internet crapped out again. You cut out real bad.
Are you guys doing anything like?
I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
Are you guys doing anything with your colors? I think that's what Dan was trying to ask.
Yeah.
Was like, these guys like do different things to dull the color or enrich the colors in some ways.
Not really. I mean, usually once you fish it a little bit and bang it into enough rocks and stuff, it starts kind of scuffing up and dulling out on its own, if not knocking the paint off altogether. No, the only thing I really do that with is like frogs. Like sometimes I'll get like my topwater frogs and put them in the dash of my car to kind of dull them out. But I don't really do that with crankbaits because they're going to get beat up and scratched up and scraped up anyway. So
yeah.
Yeah. You guys feel like it's more the action of the crankbait versus the color?
That's what I was going to
say. We all know color plays into it for sure, but
if you, my crankbait collection is 99% red and orange, and because that's generally, I generally only throw them if it's the water's got a little color, but I have, it's orange is king for me. But I think the action has a lot to do with it. I've had baits before that, like, you know, Dave was saying, you know, the paint would just be beat off of them, but they would still catch fish like they were brand new. And I think, like you said, you know, that it's got to do with the action. I mean, for sure, there's, you know, getting it to run straight is one thing. Sometimes you don't want it to run straight. That's something a lot of people don't think about. That, you know, the old wiggle warts, that's what they were known for not doing. So you want that hunting action of a bait. So yeah, just, I think it's action more than color for me personally. Color is all confidence. I mean, fishing in general is all confidence. I had this conversation with somebody the other day, like, you know, all of us that go fish these tournaments know how to fish. We know how to catch a fish. It's just having confidence in what you're throwing and where you're throwing it at. Obviously, and being around fish helps, but confidence. I think color sells fishermen. I mean, I always joked when I had the shop, like, you could literally take everything that everybody buys or that everybody catches fish on and put it on like a 4x6 rack. And that's all you really got to have. But everything else is for the fishermen to feel confident in what they're doing. And shades make a difference, but, you know, sometimes maybe they may not. Who knows? I mean, I've thrown black crankbaits in the middle of the day and caught fish. You know, a lot of times I throw them at night and catch fish. So, you know, I think it's confidence and an action for me that really makes the difference for, you know, different crankbaits. So,
well, like you said, your collection, you have so much red and orange. See, I have zero confidence in red and orange. I've never done well on it. And
I'll give you all the red and orange crankbaits you could possibly want. I've got every one of them. I don't know what it is, man. If I see a red or orange crankbait for sale online, I'm buying it. I don't care how much it costs. If it looks cool and it's orange, it's going to be mine.
Yeah, I do have like some, I have a lot of like the green into like a red belly or, you know, an orange belly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm more of a shad pattern guy. You know, shad or like a clear, you know, almost like a see-through, you know, kind of colors and whatnot.
Right, for sure.
I mean, this really exemplifies how different fishing is around the country, right? You know, because you're all red, you're all shad, Dave, right? And the reason you guys are doing that is because of where you live and where you're fishing. Because, Dave, we fish very similar waters, right? You're not too far from me. And locally, I almost exclusively, except for early spring, will fish a shad pattern or a crappie pattern, depending on what lake I'm on, until I go south, and then I'm just like Adam. Then it's red and yellow, red and orange. It's red and something,
right?
And it's always that way with crankbaits. And you know, and like we were talking before the show started, Adam, and how hard it is to do well in these tournaments. And this just shows why it's so hard, because you kind of have to be an expert on shad patterns if you come up north,
right?
And then you got to be an expert on craw patterns, you know, because I assume that's what the red's imitating. I'm not really sure, but I'm assuming it's a craw pattern.
Yeah.
You know, down south. And that just exemplifies and shows just how hard things are, because you'll throw the same bait, but you know, you come up north and it's just not going to be as good. And you go down south with a shad pattern, it's just not going to fish as good. It's not going to catch as many fish.
Yeah.
So I really like hearing that. I just wanted to point that out to some of the listeners.
I was going to say, I can probably count on one hand, maybe two hands, how many fish I've caught on a shad pattern. I did the Queen City tournament at Jordan a couple of years ago. I won with a DT8 in a shad pattern, actually. And I can honestly say that might be the only time I remember catching them on a shad pattern. Usually if I'm fishing, you know, a shad area, I'm throwing a jig or a chatterbait. I guess that's just not because that's better, but that's just because what I'm used to throwing when I get around that kind of stuff, you know, or spinnerbait.
Have shad areas. We have like shad lakes.
Dude, I don't.
So we don't have herring in any of our lakes. At least
right. Yeah. I mean, shad is the primary forage here. I mean, we have the shad spawn down here. I mean, I've got boxes of, you know, Mikey's and different wake baits that are shad pattern for shad fishing, four blade spinner baits and stuff like that. Shad's definitely a thing. It's just me, I guess, personally. You know what I mean? I'm sure there's guys around here that throw shad pattern and do well on it. And it's not that I've thrown it and not done well. I just stick to that. I like a red crankbait. I just really do. But yeah, for sure.
It always comes down to confidence, man. Always, like, absolutely. That's what I tell everybody, man. I always get tons of questions on, like, you know, what do I need to do to bump it up to the next level, or how to fish this lake or how to fish that lake? And I'm like, man, just find something that you're comfortable with, that you have confidence in, and fish
your strengths.
Confidence.
Fish your strengths. That's the best advice anybody could ever give somebody. You can't win them all, but if you fish your strengths at the ones that your strengths are good at, then you'll have a better chance at winning for sure. So
yeah.
So now, do you guys changed from season to season at all on what you're throwing for crankbaits? Like in the springtime, you're going to throw a certain brand, a certain running depth versus the summer versus the fall?
It just kind of depends. I would say that in when it gets hot in the summer, like usually I'm throwing some kind of flat side, something without rattle, something silent. But it depends on the lake. If the water's dirty, then obviously, you know, I'm gonna change what I'm throwing. But in the fall, for me, they tend to eat maybe smaller crankbaits, but that's not always true either. That's just what I've done well on, you know. Like I almost won the Jackson Championship on Kentucky Lake last year, and I was throwing, it was in October, and I was throwing a Shimano Macbeth was what I, a flat side Macbeth. It's like a circuit board. It's small, you know, and it's like, I was catching largemouth and smallmouth on it, you know, fishing like a wind current along the rocks and on points and whatnot. And then that's a good bait. It's like a $10 bait. It's not super expensive. And then they have like the normal Macbeth that's fatter. It's one of my little secret baits a lot of people don't know about. And it's awesome. But yeah, I don't know. It depends on what the fish is doing in the water clarity. But I would say, you know, in the spring, I tend to throw in the spring into the early summer, like into post spawn, I tend to throw more rowdier crankbait, stuff that pushes a lot more water, stuff that, you know, maybe makes more noise, whatever. And then as it gets later in the season, I tend to throw stuff that doesn't have rattles and flat side and smaller. And, you know, but I'll also throw flat side when it's in cold water too. So, you know, it just kind of depends.
Yeah. Same. I think, you know, early in the year, I'll throw like more of a flat side bait, something a little tighter when, you know, shad wrap style or, you know, frit sides or it's a good bait. Like I said, they're inexpensive and they fish really good. And then I'll, you know, generally around February, I'll switch over to square bill. That's when I'll start throwing a speed trap all the way up to the spawn. And then after that, you know, I've done really good on like a bigger, wider wobbling balsa bait, you know, at post spawn. The fish will kind of pull off the bed and get on the points and start feeding up. And they like just a little bit bigger bait. You're not necessarily looking for a reaction strike as much as you are, you know, trying to get that, just feed the fish essentially. So, but yeah, it's, you know, I've caught fish on speed traps all year round. I've caught fish on, you know, big balsa or, you know, big square bill balsas all year round, you know, at night and during the day. I fish a lot of night tournaments on Wiley over the years. I haven't done many the last couple of years, probably 4 or 5 a year, but used to fish, man, when I had the shop, I was fishing, I was actually talking about Tater Hog brought me a swim bait 1 year. I think it's probably 8 years ago. We used to fish a 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. tournament every year. And, you know, I like throwing a big square bill that time of year too, something big that moves a lot of water. At that point, I don't think color really matters, but at night, just something that moves a lot of water. But yeah.
Adam, you said you threw most of your crankbaits on like 15 pound line or something.
Yeah. 15 pound fluoro. I throw blue P line for everything. I did buy a spool of, what is that? Golly, what is it called? It's like $50 a spool. They didn't have any 10-pound or I needed some 10-pound line for jerkbait when I was going to a tournament. And Gamma, I bought a spool of that Gamma line. That stuff is sick. There is zero memory. It casts so good. I haven't found enough money to put on all my reels yet, but because you pay almost $30 a spool for P-line blue. That stuff I think was 50 something. But I will say this, I mean, you know, line goes bad if you're changing it out all the time, if it's you know, getting a bunch of memory on you or whatever. So if it's not doing that, you know, are you really spending more money? I mean, it's something that I just started experimenting with that Gamma a little bit. We used to do a lot of fishing shows, the Raleigh and Richmond show every year, and they used to have a booth there. And I remember fishing a little bit back then. It's super nice guys that run the company for sure. But I got on blue P line, and I don't know. It's just, again, it's a confidence thing. I broke a big fish off in a tournament on Invis-X once. Was not the Invis-X's fault, but I started using blue P line, and I don't remember in the last 5 years since I started using it exclusively breaking one off. So, but yeah, I usually use 15. If I'm going with a lighter bait, I'll go down to like a 10, maybe 12.
Yeah, you know. I was gonna say I use a lot of 12 pound when I'm fishing, you know, like shallower crank square bills, and then like I'll go down to 10 pound too, especially if they're like being finicky or I want a little bit more action out of the bait or whatever. But I do throw 15 pound on my bigger crankbait rod. I have 15 pound like on my, you know, bigger, deeper diving stuff that really, you know, I use that. And then I almost always, so I've experimented with some lines too, and there's been stuff that's not done well and had terrible memory and whatever. And, you know, I tend to like Daiwa most stuff, like all my reels are Daiwa, all my rod. Well, I have a couple Shimano's too, but like my rods are Phoenix. I have a lot of Phoenix rods, but the Daiwas are my crankbait rods. And then like, I tried the Daiwa Samurai Fluoro, and like, you know, because almost everybody I talked to said it was awesome, and it's
good. Yeah, it's, I got a really spool good. Of it. I have a spool this. Of it. I couldn't this. Find 15 pound blue somewhere, and I bought a spool of that Samurai. It's in 16, and it's also a very good line for sure.
Yeah, I got the big spools. I have like three different sizes of the big spools, but like my crankbait line, I do change out more than most of my other lines just because of the nature of it, you know. And so sometimes I don't have a 10 pound large spool. Like if I'm throwing 10, sometimes I'll get this Sunline crank, whatever it's called, the stuff made for cranking. And then, you know,
reaction FC.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. I fished Reaction FC too. It was a good line. It's coming with a purple pack, I think, right?
Yep. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah. Yep.
It was a good line.
And you guys are giving me some confidence because we're fishing a lot of the same line, very similar rods and setups. You know, I got two setups, one for bigger cranks and one for smaller cranks. You know, they're two different rods, a little different. Same action, but one's a little stiffer, one's a little bit lighter.
I use the Bushido CB7210 for like pretty much anything, you know, flat side, for any of the smaller Fritz side baits. If I go up to a heavier bait, I like the CB7212. And I still use the Corrado 100Ds for cranking. It's a killer reel. I've got like six or seven of them still, and they all cast just as good as any of the brand new stuff I have. You know, they're Japanese, and just the quality's awesome. The drag's super smooth on them, and you know, they're a good size. So but yeah, same thing. I take two rods usually, and one's got you know, 12 pound fluoro, one's got 15 pound fluoro. And like I said, if it's you know, if it's a stiffer rod and it's something where, I mean, I could see going to mono. I don't use it, but if, you know, if you got a rod that's a little bit stiff and you don't want to go buy a new fishing rod, I highly recommend throwing your crankbait on mono for sure. You know, if it's not a moderate action, you know, type rod, mono's not a bad thing to throw. Big game, Berkeley big game. I mean, I used it for topwater still, but it's a really good cranking line. I used to use it a bunch when I used to crank on when I didn't really rely on the rod as much. Now the rod kind of, I feel like, and again, it's all preference, but I think the rod does a lot of the work for you on
Hey Adam, do you know John Graves at American Tackle?
John Graves, I haven't had an account with him for a little bit. I don't remember the boy's name that I set my stuff up with, but I had a bunch of blanks I've had that I'm still
working through.
I may get back into building.
Works there.
Yeah, I may get back into building. Don Morse is who I dealt with. He was actually from Michigan as well. That's who I dealt with back when I bought him. But I still have I got a pile of blanks left over. So I've been talking about maybe kicking something off. It's the rod market's just so hard, man. It's really all about marketing. I mean, and, you know, there's very few companies that have proprietary blanks. Most of them are using somebody else's stuff, you know, but it's, you know, it, there's a big difference. I will say this, especially when it comes to like throwing a moving bait, like a crankbait or you know, chatterbait or whatever, crankbait, since we're talking about crankbaits. A rod that's built right, you know, built on the spline, guides laid out proper, makes all the difference in the world as far as your casting distance. Yeah. Even, you know, people don't realize this, and not everybody might agree, but if your rod's not built on, you know, proper on the spline, when you set the hook, there's torque in your blank. You know, your rod is meant to bend a certain way. And if you don't build it right, you're going to be torquing on your wrist and putting tension on your blank that you necessarily, you know, that isn't good for them. I mean, that's how a lot of rods break and stuff. So nobody really talks about that kind of stuff. That's a different conversation for a different day. But, yeah. You know, rod is very important when it comes to me, more important than any. I can throw the line, any line I want in any six. The 100 Ds, I think, are like a 6-3 ratio. And that's usually what I stick with. I can, the reel and the line, I can get, but if the rod isn't right, I just, it makes it a lot harder for me to feel confident in what I'm doing.
It makes it harder to land the fish and, you know, keep the fish hooked up on it. Like so many of my buddies just lose fish like crazy on crankbaits and they just like can't understand. And I'm like, dude, fish with my cranking rod for a minute.
Right.
You know, you got to have the right rod. And that depends on the person. What's right for one person might not be right for another person. But
yeah, for sure.
I hated cranking. Crankbaits all together because I would lose so many fish when I first started cranking until I got a good crankbait rod. You know, I got a St. Croix Legend Glass rod, and that changed everything, man. Then I liked it. Then I was into it because, man, you'd hook a fish, you could actually set the hook on them, and they would stay pinned.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I'm a finesse guy, so I tend to set the hook a little bit more than I should a lot of times.
Oh, I give it a couple extra wrenches. It gives
me a little forgiveness because it's a moderate rod.
Right. You know? Yeah.
And the rod's doing everything. The line's not having to do anything. It's all
right.
Rod.
Well,
and you get the sensitivity with a fluoro. You can that's one thing I liked when I switched to fluoro is like I generally, you know, talking about the line size too, I like a 15 because of the abrasion resistance as well. It's a little thicker line. Yeah. You know, you can get away with a little more before you got to retie. But I like, you know, 9 times out of 10 when I'm fishing a crankbait, there's going to be rocks involved. We don't have a ton of, I mean, there's certain situations where I'll throw in a blowdown or something like that. But, you know, usually again, I'll switch to a jig or something like that in that situation. So generally I'm throwing around rock and, you know, the sensitivity of the line makes a big difference for me as well. Cause you really want to feel your bait kind of coming over stuff. You want to be like, okay, like, you know, that tournament at Jordan that I did well in, there was one piece of something on the bottom there and it was clockwork. Every time I hit, I would feel it hit and I would hold my breath for a second. Cause I'd be like, yep. And it was like 5 or 6 fish in a row. Just every time I hit it, it was just money. And you know, line has a lot to do with it. When you go from, you know, mono to fluoro, it's a lot more sensitive line for sure. So,
and you brought up a good point about the retying. Like when I'm cranking, I mean, every cast or two, I'm running my hands.
Absolutely. You have to, yep.
Because you will lose fish because your line has gotten dragged against a rock or whatever. And, you know, you got to just kind of be on top of that. And it's, you know, but yeah, between the rod and the hooks, like I rarely lose a crankbait fish anymore. I mean, it happens. It's gonna happen no matter what. You're gonna lose fish, but I mean, nothing like when I first started cranking. I used to be ready to snap a rod over my knee because I'd be losing them every bite, you know. It's between the rod and the hooks and checking your line and stuff. I mean, absolutely.
Fishing is about those details, man. And I don't care what you're throwing or how you're throwing it. if you are on top of those details for those baits, you're going to land more fish, man. And crankbait, and I think he has even more of that because of the hooks, the action in the bait itself, and then you go all the way through the line and reel, and you know. So, you know, what I didn't hear you guys talk about was reel speed. What's your guys – do you guys change your reel speed for cranking versus throwing a jig, or are you throwing – you know, let's hear what your guys' thoughts are on that.
Most of my reels are 7.1 to 1, whatever they are, the 7 speed, even cranking. Now, I do have a 6 that I'll use sometimes for deeper cranks. I don't know. It just seems to like
– more power.
Yeah, because those deeper cranks like dig so hard and stuff. It just, I don't know. It just feels better when I use it. But I'll use a 7, and I'm pretty good at slowing down. Like, obviously, if you're catching fish, you're excited and you'll reel faster and just not even know it until you start paying attention to like what you're doing. And then you're like, oh, yeah, you know, and you gotta kind of make yourself slow down. But yeah, I pretty much stick to 7s with most things. I do have a couple 8.1s that, you know, I bought when I was first buying reels and trying to figure out which reels I liked and whatever. And I use them. I use one for my like Texas rig rod. And then, you know, I can reel up line pretty quick and whatever. But yeah, I mean, 7 is my comfort zone.
I use, I like a 6.3, I think it is. It's the Corrado 100Ds. I've got a pile of them, and they've held up really well. They're a good size spool. It holds just enough line where you're not wasting a bunch of line. I don't use backer if I don't have to. So 6.3, if I go deep, like if I'm fishing offshore, like a 6XD, 8XD, 10XD, I usually drop down to like 10 or 12 pound line and then throw like a 5 ratio. I'm really weird about resistance on my reeling. So like, you know, like you were saying, as far as, you know, when you go to a deeper bait, you like to go slower because, you know, it's just think of it like a car, you know, gearing or rear end gearing. Essentially, the lower the gear ratio, the less resistance there is on your hand. So I like, it may be more of a feel thing for me. You know, I really like to walk my bait over whatever I'm fishing. Sometimes I'll even, you know, depending on the situation, sometimes if there's a certain speed I want it to go, I'll, you know, pull it over whatever I'm fishing too. And you know, just consistency and your cadence and reeling makes a big difference. You know, like Dave was saying, as far as getting excited, again, we know we're talking crankbaits, but like at Logan Martin, I was throwing a chatterbait a good bit. And when you get on like a roll where you're catching 3 or 4 fish, and then you're like, next thing you know, you find yourself, you're just like, and it's like, all right, dude, stop, just take your breath and just remember what you were, you know, what speed you were reeling when you caught that fish. It's the same thing with crankbaits. I mean, obviously too, with them, they won't run right if you go too fast, but, it's, I think that 100D is like a 6.63, I believe. That's what I'm comfortable with. You know, sometimes I like them faster. I mean, there may be times I'm missing bites because I'm not reeling quite as fast. And I feel like I can speed it up and slow it down enough to where I kind of get the best of both worlds with that six and change reel. So
I find that I had to go to a 6.5. Because yeah. I just reel too fast. I just cannot.
I'm the same way.
Mentally, yeah. Slow my reel down. I just can't do it. And it, yep. And I'm like, why am I not catching anything in my crankbaits? You know, because I'm burning them out of everything.
Right.
If I don't get a slower reel, and even then, I find myself like I'm reeling faster because I'm like it's not moving fast enough. I'm like,
yeah,
down, you know,
for sure.
Yeah,
for me, it's always first thing in the morning. Like I'm so jacked up, ready to go.
Right,
I have to tell myself to slow down.
Or after you catch some fish, man, that's the hardest part. When you get on a bite, and you're like, I tell you something. It's not crankbait related, but what kind of one of those ta-da moments I had. I took a buddy of mine fishing that doesn't fish a whole lot, and we were throwing chatterbaits one night, and he was catching fish left and right, and I couldn't get bit. I'm like, what is he doing different? We're throwing the exact same bait. We're throwing at the exact same point. And I mean, he caught like 4 or 5 fish, and I had caught like 1. And it hit me, he's throwing it on a spinning reel, which is like a 4.8 ratio. So he's like dragging this thing on the bottom, and I'm just reeling it like a normal, you know, on a, I think I usually throw my chatterbait on a 7 something. And look at the, I throw that Crotto 70 a good bit. And, you know, it hit me, and sure enough, I'm looking to the side. I just started creeping that thing, and oh my goodness, it was like a whole, I just like started getting bit. And ever since, that was probably 8 years ago. And it's just always stuck in my head. Like, you know, sometimes it makes a difference. You know, the retrieve speed makes a big difference for sure. And I mean, you can retrieve it at any speed with any reel. I mean, you can reel it faster and reel it slower. But like I said, I think the lower gear ratio, you get a little less resistance when you're reeling it in. It doesn't feel like you're, you know, pulling a sail through the water sometimes for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
The feel of the actual, you know, bait coming through the water. It's, you know, all preference too. So,
yeah.
So it just seems so important with crankbaiting is that retrieve speed. I mean, because that's imparting all the action, right? I mean, the faster you go, the tighter the wobble gets, or the slower you go, depending on the baits, right? I mean,
the sound it makes when it hits whatever it's going to hit, you know? It's speed definitely makes a big difference for sure.
So, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, other than speed, like, you know, the material, you know, what it's made of, your float rate and stuff. I think that's something else that people don't really think about.
Yeah.
You know,
like, the Normans are made out of some kind of weird, I forget what the plastic's called, some kind of old school plastic. And it's totally different than like what your, you know, newer modern baits are made out of.
Yeah. Like,
is there anything to do that y'all do with tuning your baits? Hopefully I didn't miss it, but like, is there anything specific? I know some people are, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what they do. I usually just fish them out of the pack. Secrets I don't know.
Not unless it's running wrong. Like, if you're throwing it and it's running sideways, you know, you can look at it and, like, usually where the split rings go, if it's running really bad, you'll usually notice that something's not right, like where the split ring hooks that first little loop, it might be bent a little or cocked to one side, and you can get, like, your pliers and kind of bend it back straight, or you can actually, if it is straight, you can kind of turn it one direction and make it swim a little bit to one way, or, you know, it just kind of, that's the only tuning I've ever done. And then, like, I've had ones like where the bill gets worn down from it beating into stuff that I've used so much, like it won't run right, and I can sand down the other part of the bill to make it like even again so it'll run. But that's pretty much it. That, and like, if it's, you know, sometimes if you change out the hooks and the hooks are too light, it won't run right. You have to use bigger hooks or whatever, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, if you use too big a hook, sometimes you'll get, you're like, why is this thing getting snagged up? And it's like, well, it's because the bait's not coming up and it's wanting to stay buried in the rock or the wood or whatever you're throwing it against too. But
yep.
I had one tournament where, because of how I had to position my kayak, there was a little bit of current, and there was a tree I wanted to fish that was kind of sticking out of the water, and I could see it, and I had to take my square bill crankbait, crank it over so it would do this like sweeping right-hand turn because of where I was sitting and how the current was in. There wasn't a lot of current. It was just enough that I couldn't make the cast. So I had to like change my crankbait over to do that. And I mean, I didn't cash a check or anything, but it made it so I caught two fish off that tree, which I just couldn't make the cast to. That's the only time I've ever like tried to like steer or tune it other than changing like hook weight. You know,
that's the cool thing about
hook weight's just all about the action. Like, do I want to slow it down a little bit and make it move slower?
But yeah, that's the cool thing about fishing is like, there's no wrong way to do it, right? So like, whatever you need to do to get your bites and whatever you have confidence in, you know, that's, I think a lot of people, I'm going to have a profound moment here with you guys. So, you know, in this area, we've got a lot of, you know, professional anglers. Shane LeHue's winning every weekend on Norman. Hank's Cherry's winning every week. I mean, I fished against these guys and with these guys. I mean, I've had the pleasure of sharing the boat with, you know, Shane Lineberger, Hank Cherry, Shane LeHue, Todd Auten. You know, and we all think, oh, there's this big secret that they're all doing and it's all the same and they're doing the, it's, there's not. Like, it's, they're doing, you know, what's works for them in that moment, whether it be bending a, you know, an eyelet so the bait's, you know, running into an area, you know, into a strike zone you want it to, or making it hunt a little bit more, or, you know, it's, I don't think there's like some big secret. I think there's, you know, it's, fishing is so conditions oriented that, you know, having confidence in what you're doing and having the ability, throwing something where you have the ability to modify it some, and that, you know, that's what makes crankbaits cool. I did a terrible job preparing for this. If you ever want to do like a deep dive on real cool custom baits, call me and we will, I would love to do that because I've got a bunch of wild stuff. But there's a guy, Calvin Johnson, here in the Carolinas that's been kind of known for modifying baits. He'll take like a Rister wrap and pull the lip out of it and put a Bagley's, you know, thumbnail lip in it, and then drill a hole in the throat and put a weight in it, and then, you know, drill a hole in the side and put a rattle in it. And it's just like this Frank, they look great. But it's this Frankenstein bait that just does things that it's not supposed to do. And it's like, you know, they work. I mean, I've, you know, caught a few fish on them. They're really expensive, so I try not to throw them a whole bunch, but I got a few.
Johnson, like Megatron?
What's that?
Yeah.
I'm a football player. Sorry.
I'm a Lions fan, bro. I know exactly.
No, you okay? Well, I know they're doing good now. I can't even say that.
They did good this year, man. They've been pretty poor in free agency. I actually left that here. My grandparents go to Florida every year for the winter and for Michigan. And I didn't fish a second day at Harris to go watch that NFC Championship game with my granddad. They lived down by Lake Istipoga. And that was the boat. Let's talk about crankbaits. I don't want to talk about football.
Well, guys, we hit about the hour mark, and that's kind of what we strive for. You know, we'd like to give you guys a chance to thank any of your sponsors or anyone who's helped you out in any way. And Dave, we'll start with you.
Yeah, for sure. I would like to thank my sponsor, my really only sponsor, but I'm actually had the good fortune of being picked up by a team this year. I'm fishing on Battlefield Outdoors. They're based out of Chattanooga. It's a kayak shop, frisbee golf, kayak, and bike.
I bought a Titan from there back in the day.
They're good people. It's a cool store. I went down and visited a little while ago. You know, we got jerseys. You know, there's a few guys on the team. We've been kind of talking and sharing information, and yeah, it's just kind of a great situation. I'm kind of glad that they asked me to join their team. And, you know, as they're building it up, the team will get better and, you know, everything. Yeah, that's my sponsor. And then some of the local shops, like some of the the guys that run Bluegrass Kayak Anglers, which is like Jay Wallen and Kyler, those guys have like been great help to me since I first got into the sport, and just kind of helped me, like, you know, learn everything and helped walk me through when I was dumb and didn't know anything. And you know, then there's Kayaks and More is a shop that's by Nolan here in Kentucky, and Tony and those guys, their team, you know, I fish with a lot of those guys. And yeah, where can people find me online? I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram. My season hasn't officially started. Well, I guess it started at the Chickamauga event, because I just got my vacation refresh this week. So I'll be starting to fish now, you know, the next 3 weekends. I have tournaments and I haven't signed up for Norman yet, but I'm probably going to do it. And, but yeah, I'm on, I'm Catch of the Dave, like my name, Dave, on Instagram.
I like it.
And, yeah, and then just Dave Hobenstein on Facebook.
There you go. Cool. Adam, how about you, man?
I don't really have any sponsors. I had a lot of people that helped me. Obviously, made a lot of relationships throughout the years with the shop and stuff. You know, I think the biggest the two biggest people to thank right now are AJ McWhorter and Steve Owens for, if we're just talking about kayak fishing, what those dudes have done with those national trails are something we've always dreamed of, as far as, you know, somebody who's, you know, came from the boat world, you know, dabbled in the kayak world, was around it, but, you know, decided to jump in it a few years ago. That was like the dream goal, was to be able to travel the country and, you know, fish affordably at some of these lakes and have a chance at winning some money and, you know, meeting great people. I mean, I stayed with a couple guys from New Orleans at Logan Martin that I'd never met. And I told my wife, I'm like, yeah, I'm staying with two dudes I've never met. And she's like, you're crazy. And I'm like, you don't understand.
I've done that too. I know.
So I mean, you know, to have the opportunity to meet those guys and, you know, guys like that and travel the country is great. Sam Robertson at Great Outdoor Revision Company in Charlotte, they're Hobie. I think they do Native and Jackson as well. He's hooked me up with a bunch of little odds and ends, weird stuff that I just couldn't find other places. I was rigging my NK-180 and I needed some of those little cord stops that come on the Hobie hulls or whatever. And he happened to have some laying around, dropped them in the mail for me without even asking. You know, he has been there since I got in. I don't know when he started, but I started kayak fishing around 2011. And we used to go to seminars there, and he was there then, I believe. And anytime somebody would come in the shop and want a Hobie, I'd send him over there. So he's great. In Queen City, I mean, obviously Vinny, I remember the very first time I met Vinny, it was at Bobby's Ramp on northern part of Lake Wylie. He was running the check-in for the Hardcore Kayak Invitational, I believe it was, one of the Hardcore Kayak tournaments, and was just this spiky haired dude from New Jersey. And now he's the mafia boss of kayak fishing in the Carolinas. But, you know, that dude's hustle is second to nobody's. I give him a hard time. I think the weird thing is, like, a lot of people, I've been around on Facebook a lot and said a lot of things on there to a lot of people over the years. But a lot of these guys that are getting Queen City don't realize the relationship me and I have. So they think I'm being a jerk or whatever. That's just how I am to Vinny, because, yeah, I mean, he's that way to me. So, but there's nobody that does it as good as those three boys, and, you know, that I've dealt with. They've done a great job of just bringing people together, getting people in the sport, and helping the people that are in the sport that want to go do bigger things in the sport have that opportunity. So, you know, that's thanks to all those guys. But last shout out, I don't know if you guys, you know, do any of the Facebook pages for crankbaits, but Woodbait Nation, you guys should get on there. That is probably, you know, one of the best resources for handmade stuff. They obviously, you're not allowed to post any plastic baits or talk about plastic baits on there. It's strictly forbidden, but there's guys, you know, builders from all over the country on there that, you know, post their goods from time to time and talk about stuff. They're usually pretty good. If you got questions about, you know, why things work and stuff, I've been on that page since its inception. I don't know how long it's been, but it's been a while. You can, you know, if you want to get into square bill fishing, you know, there's a perfect example. James Marshall over here in the Carolinas he all the time's posting baits. This little, I think he sells these for like $18. And I mean, you know, it's hard to get into wood baits for, you know, that price range. And they fish great. Like I said, I bought my first batch a few weeks ago. I was really wanting to take them down to Murray. Unfortunately, I could not do that. But did, you know, like I said, did catch a couple fish, definitely found some key fish in practice on it. And you know, but yeah, there's a lot of guys out there like that, that, you know, make killer stuff that, you know, buy a wood bait, try a balsa bait. If you've never spent money on a wood bait, go find one that looks cool to you. Maybe do a little research and make sure it's somebody that's been building baits for a while. Because I have got some, they're not very, I can only think of maybe one or two baits I've bought where they're just like, oh my gosh. But most of those guys on there, whether it be like Microno with the squat square bill, you know, this is one of the only shad pattern baits that I will throw. This thing is the bomb. These are very, you probably won't see many of those pop up if you do buy them. But like I said, James's baits are really good. Get you one and try it, because it's a lot different than throwing a plastic bait. It's you'll notice it to be they seem to not get hung up as much, and they just, I don't know, there's something cool about taking something that somebody spent hours making and catching a fish on it. I mean, you know, it's, I don't know, something kind of sentimental about that. Sorry if I'm getting corny, but no. I like wood baits.
Yeah. It made stuff cool. Yeah, like you said, God bless the TDs. They definitely don't get enough love.
Dude, I couldn't imagine. When I messaged Steve about that, I was like, I may seem like I like to be a pain in the butt on social media, but I really don't. I'm like, I do not want to tell Steve that all this is like 2 days before a tournament. The last thing he wants to have to deal with is telling somebody they're disqualified, which, I mean, I knew it was going to be, but, you know, he handled it with the – I didn't expect him to handle it any other way, but just the utmost class and, like, you know, it was – they're the best, man. It's awesome seeing what they're all doing.
Dude, good first, TVs, like,
I mean, they make the sport.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's I mean, look at Bass. I mean, Steve, obviously everybody likes and knows Steve, and he took it from being something nobody liked. Something that I heard wasn't, you know, obviously wasn't as popular, maybe just because it was getting going, and now it's the biggest kayak bass fishing tournament ever was 2 weeks ago. So, you know, you mix a good guy like that everybody likes in a tournament trail, and, you know, Hobie's the same way. Like I said, I expect to see 200 plus boats at Norman. And, you know, it's the same way. I mean, I've had, again, best experience. I think the best experience I had at a tournament was the TOC at Eufaula. That was so cool. I mean, you know, getting your gift bag and just, you know, sitting there and looking around at like literally 50, or I think there was 50. So 49 of the, you know, best kayak anglers that you see on the internet. And it's pretty cool. Very cool experience to be able to do that. So.
Dude, those guys are so great. I got my first year fishing a national trail. I got a top 10 the Hobie at Chickamauga.
I remember that. Yeah.
DQ'd like 2-3 days later because I posted pics and I didn't even realize I didn't have my life jacket on. And I was devastated.
Yeah, I felt bad for you, dude. I remember I was at that tournament.
Like, I was talking to AJ on the phone, like, crying because, you know, I was just so upset. And, like, both AJ and Steve-O, like, talked, and they were like, dude, it happens. Like, you'll never do it again. Like,
right. What happened there? Exactly. You
know, they've just both been, like, Steve-O talked me down off of that edge. And then, you know, AJ, ever since then, every time he sees me, he comes over and talks to me. They're just good dudes, too.
They are, for sure.
The hard work that they do. So, yep. Yeah, they deserve a thanks.
Yeah. All right. Well, we appreciate y'all being on. Sorry about the internet connections. The host should not have problems like that. I apologize.
You're good, dude. We appreciate you having us on, man.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
It was fun. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see y'all next week.